Tuesday, July 18th, was a very full day. When there is a state dinner, especially in the summertime, I am likely to crowd around it as many appointments as the day will hold, because I know I will be in town, and especially this summer, when I am trying to save out periods of 3 or 4 days back to back to be in Texas with Lucy or with our house project. At 9 o'clock, I was in the treaty room for a library meeting with Dr. Grover and Dorothy Torito. I could very well call July the month of the library. It has absorbed a lot of my hours and thoughts. This was the first of two at which Dr. Grover will meet with Lennon's executive assistants to cue them in on the status and philosophy of the library and how they can help. Harry McPherson and Walt Rostow and John Roach, Bromley Smith, Charles Schulte, Doug Cater, Joe Califano, and George Christian and Marvin Watson were all grouped around the cabinet table. I was surprised we could get this many of them together at once. Each of these will have a hand in the eventual worth of the library, and I want to cue them in early and enthusiastically. I excused myself after about 45 minutes. I'll get a chance at the second part of it tomorrow, and went to the swimming pool alone for 30 laps, and then to Jean-Louise for a shampoo and set, all of it with that spirit of rush, 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 because I had to be back at the White House at 12:40 to dress for the state luncheon for the president of Iceland, Mr. Asgeirsson. I found that Lyndon was having a private talk with him in the yellow room, and when I was dressed and the rest of the Icelandic party arrived, Mr. Asgeirsson, a widower, has as his hostess his daughter-in-law, Mrs. Thorhalla Asgeirsson, pretty, blonde, amiable. We all went into the yellow room and joined Lyndon and the president. Sadly, I must say, I had done less of my homework than on any state visit. Usually, homework consists of looking at my National Geographic world maps, finding the country, fitting it in mentally with all those that surround it, reading the State Department briefings about the country and the little biographies of the visitors themselves, checking to see if they by any chance sent a wedding present to Lucy, and most especially going back over my memories of my visit to that country if I've been there. Very important is to go in to the yellow room ahead of time and see our gifts lined up for a few hopefully smooth and interesting words that describe these gifts. This time, I give myself a C- for my preparation. I stumbled through a description of the gifts. One of them was a hand painting of the modest home in which the Asgeirssons had lived in Chevy Chase when they worked here for several years with the embassy. The most unique gift, last and totally undescribed by me, was a decoupage lamp by André Lindo. Antique prints of fish placed inside a glass globe, handsomely mounted and with a handsome shade. A really excellent gift for a fisherman from a country that lived by a fish. We went down the grand staircase as "Hail to the Chief" sounded, bringing my heart right up into my throat always. Pictures at the foot of the steps, and then into the line for what was really a very interesting guest list. Dean and Virginia were there, Jane and Orville Freeman from the cabinet, and from the Senate, two of my New England friends, the Winston Prattys and the Thomas McIntyres, William Spongs from Virginia, a sizable group from the House, including our friends the Abe Kazins and the young and attractive Lee Hamiltons from Indiana. One sad note was with our own ambassador, former Governor Karl Rovog. I asked how his wife was. She has been desperately sick ever since they reached Iceland. It was not diagnosed for days and days. It must have been a frightful time for them, but now he feels that she is recovering and in weeks will be herself again. Betty Furness was there with the man she's going to marry, and General Walt, back from Vietnam, his barrel chest loaded with ribbons, a very impressive, tough-looking man, but with that certain air of gentleness in dealing with women that often goes with the strongest men. Frequently you get more acceptances from those in the world of entertainment for luncheons than for dinners, though luncheons do not have the same brilliance and eclat as dinners. It's simply that they can't miss their own performances at night without considerable loss. So we had Lottie Lenya, the singer, and the Peter Neros, a pianist, and the Rip Torns. She's actress Geraldine Page. And another actress, Eileen Heckert. From Texas, there were the Jake Hammonds and the D. Kellys, and my good friend Louis Shanks, all five of whom had been house guests the night before, and our real fun together had been at dinner in the long twilight on the Truman balcony. Bob Anderson's former Secretary of Treasury, former practically everything, and his wife Ollie had been our house guest too. Bob was busy today, but Ollie came to the luncheon, and I'm sure carefully eyeing the White House to see the changes that Mrs. Kennedy had made. She'd expressed herself pretty forthrightly about them the night before. Mrs. Jake Hammond likes the screen and stage, supports Dallas Theater, and knows a lot of the people. So when I sent in the guest list to her, I had marked the names of those who were coming today, and I'd suggested to some of the aides that they make sure they met. And the young D. Kellys were having the time of their life. But nobody surpassed my friend Louis Shanks in enjoying it, I believe, and that made me feel warmly happy. Astronauts Joe Engel and Alfred Worden, who had recently returned from Iceland where they had been exploring the terrain because it was similar to what they might land on the moon, were guests, and also Professor and Mrs. Paul Bauer, who was the recipient of the Icelandic Order of the Falcon. In fact, there were several businessmen with relations to Iceland, airlines especially. Horace and Mary V were there, and Hester Bell Provinson, who has done so much for me in trying to make my speaking voice more acceptable, more winning. In all things, you profit from work. And she is one of the many folks who has worked with me to improve me in this job I'm in. I always try to include in these affairs some of my own personal people that I am obligated to. Dylan Ripley was present, and the director of the Guggenheim Museum, Mr. Harvard Arneson, of Icelandic descent, and the usual quota of educators, this time one from Talladega College, Alabama. I always have a fellow feeling for the Mississippians or Alabamans I see here, white or black. This is Thor Thors, whose husband had been Iceland's ambassador here for so long that he was right next to the dean until his death. And a sizable contingent of newsmen, including the Jack Horners and the David Lawrences and the Bob Spivaks. A pleasant lunch of 136. I found it slow going talking with the president. And alas, my chief memory of my visit to his country was not the sort you can discuss. It was of a suit of walrus hide, I think, that had been a present to Linda Bird. She had been supposed to put it on for picture-taking purposes. Alas, a 5'10" girl must have been simply beyond the thinking of Icelanders, because although they were supposed to have had her dimensions, they had made it for a girl who must have been about 5'4". And the picture of Linda getting into it is still hilarious in my mind. It was stiff as a board. She struggled manfully. We all talked about greasing her with butter. And finally, we all just collapsed and leaned against the walls of the room, holding our sides with laughter, while she struggled and twisted and wrestled, and finally, looking somewhat like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, managed to zip it up and present a valiantly smiling face for the photographers, while the rest of us stood around composing our faces and our manners as best we could. Actually, I always enjoy state dinners and state luncheons. And as for the luncheons, I particularly regret that there's so little time to really visit with the guests, since there's no entertainment afterward. Bess works hard, and I help her, at seating people with those that they will be congenial with, sparked by, interested in. And we try to divide up the celebrities, to give everyone something to talk about when they go home. But it was over a little before 3, and back up on the second floor, I was at work on the telephone and at the desk, going over the reception list for Thursday afternoon, the Historic Preservation Committee, adding some of my own personal preservationists. It's getting to be one of my major interests these days. And then at 4, in the yellow oval room, I had some of our ambassadors' wives for tea. Mrs. Hernandez, who is going to Paraguay, and I had Punta del Este to talk about, and how well Lyndon and President Stroessner had gotten along. And since she was from New Mexico, we hit a congenial note on Santa Fe and the mountains and the golden aspen. And then there was Donna Hayes, Mrs. John Hayes, on her way back to Switzerland after a trip to the States for the graduation of her daughter. But by all means, the most talkative one, who really kept us all intrigued, was Mrs. Howard Cottam, whose husband was our ambassador to Kuwait, She talked very easily of that little country, so unique, country of sand and poverty, until a few decades ago when oil was discovered, now exorbitantly rich, and apparently having chosen the course of devoting most of the money to education and hospitals and roads and people-oriented services. The philosophy, the leadership, the how do they do it, interests me very much. And we talked of Selma Sheikh, whom Mrs. Cottam had known quite well. Later in the afternoon, I went out to the grape arbor. Clusters are growing, still green, in August they will be ripe. And Warren Lynn came and sat with me, and I signed reams of library letters. And Ashton came out, and we worked on mail. And then I went up to the Truman balcony, my other favorite summer spot, and Dorothy Torito and I had an hour's session on additional library letters. Then to the bowling lanes, alone, two games, not much fun, but I must have exercise. A revel in feeling fit and rebel against the encroaches of weariness or old age. Later, I thought about my interview tomorrow with Henry Brandon and tried to organize my own thinking. What did I do with my spare time? What did I love? How had Lyndon's being in the presidency changed me? How did I look at my participation in the whole beautification conservation work? You can pretty well predict the questions that they will ask. You can also try to insert others that they do not ask. If you want to explain yourself better, come across as a more whole person. It was one of those late nights for Lyndon, and our house guests had gone. I had not been able to say goodbye to them. But we'd had such a good visit last night, and a moment at lunch. One of the amenities of this house I shall always remember with pleasure is having overnight guests. The opportunity, perhaps, to give them something to remember and to share some hours of real conversation with them and our very varied lot they have been.